Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Ayin Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin on Daf Ayin Zayin Amud Beis, 7 lines from the bottom. I repeat, today's shiur for Daf Ayin Ches begins 7 lines from the bottom of Daf Ayin Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara that opens today's shiur is a reference back to a source that we saw in our previous year, the latter part of our previous year. There's a little arrow that you'll see to the side of the Gemara text, which enables you to see what we are referring to. In the middle of the Omid, there is a Tanaic source that we learned last time that read, Gonav Kilayim V'Tovcha Trefu Mochra Mishalim Tishlumi Arba V'Chamisha. The source featured a case of a theft of kilayim. Kilayim is an animal that basically is a mixed breed. Its parents, one was a sheep, the other was a goat, for example. And the source tells us that upon its theft and subsequent slaughter, the thief will have to pay 4 or 5 times the value. For the theft and slaughter of a kilayim. Before we begin the actual Gemara text, let us glance at the side where we have in our margin a nosei, a topic heading, which reads, Eich nitan lavin hadikatoni liel, how can we understand that which was taught earlier, the source we just read, the gonav v'tovach kilayim, chayov bedalid v'hei. The theft and slaughter of a kilayim results in a multiple payment of 4 or 5, Laor, in light of Habinyan Avshel Rava. Rava has a teaching presenting a principle, She'oimer, Kol Mokim Shekosuv Seh, where the Torah uses the word Seh, Eino Elo Lahoitzi Asa Kilayim. The word Seh is to the exclusion of Kilayim. Well, in our topic of theft and slaughter, we have a pasuk. It's featured in The pasuk is found in Shmos Perek Chof Aleph, pasuk Lamed Zayin. We have it included on the side of our Gemara. So if we read the pasuk ahead of time, let's do it together. Ki yignoiv ish shor oiseh utvochoy umachoroy chamisha boku yishalim tachas asheru v'arba tzorin tachas aseh. In this pasuk you see reference to Gneva and Tavicha. And what animals are mentioned? You have a shor and a seh. A seh is mentioned. And according to the principle of Rava, where you see the word seh, so a mixed breed is excluded. How then can the Tanaic source above teach that the kilayim, theft and slaughter, results in the multiple payments that the pasuk refers to? The very pasuk that uses the word seh, which, according to Rava, would exclude Kilayim. Now, the Gemara. 7 lines from the bottom of Ayin Zayin Amud Beis. Kilayim. The word Kilayim is a reference to the quote above in the Tanaic source. And it said there that Kilayim, theft and slaughter, results in multiple payments. How could that be? Seh, Ksiv. The word Seh appears in the pasuk we just read. The Omar Rava. Rava says in Maseches Chulin, in a different tractate altogether, but he says the following, Ze bono av. The following teaches us a rule. Kol mokim shenemar se, wherever the word se appears, eino elo lohoitzi es hakilayim, to the exclusion of kilayim. The Meforshim here, Tosfos and Rashi, make reference to what is the source for Rava. That's not of central importance for us right now, but just let it be known that there is a place in the Torah that the word se appears, and it's there to the exclusion of kilayim, and we learn from there that wherever se appears, we know to exclude kilayim. And we apply that to our case over here, where se does appear, in the case of theft and slaughter. So you would expect us to exclude kilayim from those multiple payments. The Gemara answers, Shiny Hocha, this topic, our topic, is different. Hocha means over here. Here in our topic of theft and slaughter is different. Yom HaKra, Oy. The word Oy appears in the Pasuk. If you look at once again, it says, Ki Ignov Ish Shor Oy Se. So the word O appears. L'rabois Es Akilayim. That word comes to include as causing the multiple payment obligation to include kilayim. So you have this word oi. Oi is an inclusionary expression. The Gemara asks, V'chol oi l'rabbeisu, is that really so that where the word oi appears, it's inclusionary? V'ah, Tanya, we have a Tanaic source that speaks of sacrifices. And this pasuk is found in Vayikra, Perek Chof Beis, Pasuk Chof Zayin. And in the pasuk it says, and actually before we continue with the Gemara text, just to get a flavor of the pasuk, let's read it. We've included it on the side of your marked Gemara. It says there in Vayikra Chof Beis, Pasuk Chof Zayin, Shor oy kesev oy eiz, ki yivoleid, v'hoyo shivas yomim tachas imoy. The pasuk describes these different kind of animals that are born, an ox, a sheep, a goat. When born, they shall remain 7 days with their mother. From the 8th day of its life onwards, it's suitable to being sanctified and brought as a sacrifice. So regarding korbonus, regarding that topic, what does it say? Shor oy kesev. And what do we see? You see the word oi. We've dashed, underlined it, and lo and behold, prat lekilayim, to the exclusion of a mixed breed animal. It's ineligible to serve as a sacrifice. Oi eis prat lenidme. The word oi once again excludes a nidme. Nidme is an animal who has, we'll say, normal parentage. It's not a mixed breed. However, just imagine a situation. We'll call it a mutation where two sheep mate, male and female, and the offspring looks like nidme, resembles a goat. That too is excluded from serving as a sacrifice. What do you see? You see the word oy is actually exclusionary. Omar Rava, Hocha Miinyone Dekra V'Hocha Miinyone Dekra. We have two topics right now. Here, we judge Meinyone Dekra from the essence of the Pasuk itself, here in the case of theft, and here in the case of Korbanos, also Meinyone Dekra. You look, judge the use of the word Oy from the essence of the verse itself. And the Gemara spells this out. Hocha Gabi Gneiva, here regarding theft, where we're including the Kilayim, Dichtiv, what does it say? It says Shor Oise. In the Pasuk, we read the Pasuk earlier, Ki Ignov Ish Shor Oise. The Pasuk describes a man slaughtering, he steals a shor, an ox, or a seh, or a sheep. These kind of animals cannot be mated together. She'i ato yochel lehotzi kilayim mibeinehem. The physical intimacy between these two animals would not result in an offspring. A shor has a 9-month gestation period, and a sheep has a 5-month gestation period. They can't produce an offspring together. So when you read the pasuk, you wouldn't expect a kilayim to be included. The nature of the pasuk itself would be to exclude kilayim. So what do I need the word oi for? So oi l'rabo is kilayim. If you got this, we'll say this extra word here, it must be doing something that I wouldn't have expected on my own. On my own, I see a shor and a seh. They cannot produce a kilayim. nothing would come of their mating. So O must come to include that which I wouldn't have expected. Gabi Kodshim Dechtiv Kesev Yeis. In the pasuk that we read concerning Korbanus, you see these animals, a sheep and goat. Shata Yochol Hotzi Kilayim Mibeinahem. They mate. If they mate, they will produce an offspring, a mixed breed. So that when you look at the pasuk of Kodshim, you see that you would expect that a mixed breed would also be included. Therefore, oi, the word oi, which is, let's say, an extra word, what's it coming to do? It's coming to do what we'll call the unexpected. Lema'et, who it's coming to exclude the kilayim. The Gemara asks, when looking at that pasuk of the korbanos, the ha gabi kachim, we're continuing at the top of the ayin chesom and aleph. The ha gabi kachim nami nemar shor oi kesev. In the very pasuk that we read, it also says shor, an ox or a kesev or sheep. Sheina shein ato yochol lahotzi kilayim mi beinayim. If you focused on shor and kesev, what you can't produce from them a kilayim, and you have the word oi there as well. So, vinarbi, so let us include kilayim as being suitable for a sacrifice. The Gemara answers, midesefa lema'et, resha nami lema'et. From the fact that the end of the pasuk, where you see kesef oez, is coming to exclude, so too the beginning of the pasuk has to be understood in an exclusionary fashion. And by the way, when you look back at the source, we had deliberately, we squiggle underlined the word prat twice. It was four lines from the bottom of Ayin Zaymud Beis. We had a double exclusion. We excluded kilayim, we excluded nidmeh, because the word oy had appeared twice. So that's fine, that's good that you have two oy words, got to do something with them. From the fact that the end of the pasuk was exclusionary, I understand that the beginning is exclusionary as well. Adarabba, to the contrary, midereisha l'rabbos seifonami l'rabbos. Why not say the opposite? That from the fact that in the reisha where it said shor oy kesef, the oy was could be understood as inclusionary. So in the seif also, it'll be inclusionary. What would we be saying then? Well, you'd include in the reisha, the first part of the pasuk shor oy kesef, you'll include in, from the word oy there kilayim, and the word oy in the seif, it's a kesef oy eis, you'll include there the nidmeh as being kosher sacrifices. Hi, my, how can that be? The Gemara asks, answers in response to that suggestion. E amris bishlam olamait. If you say that the posuk, the oy in kochim, is exclusionary, who the itzterich trei miuti? So, in light of that, I understand I need two exclusionary expressions. Afalgav the imit kilayim, even though the beginning of the pasuk, the oy, the first o excludes kilayim. What's kilayim? That's a mixed breed. That's not suitable as a sacrifice. It's derech limutei nidmeh. I still need a separate exclusion for nidmeh. Namely, had I told you that kilayim is excluded from sacrifices, well, that's because you have a real mixed breed there. You've got two different parents. One's a goat, one's a sheep. Would you know from that exclusion that nidmeh is also disqualified and ineligible? What's nidmeh? The two parents are of the same variety, two sheep. The offspring happen just to be a mutation, but the two parents are the same. Would you have excluded that from serving as a sacrifice? Therefore, I need, in addition to the exclusion of kilayim, I need a special scriptural exclusion for nidmeh. I wouldn't have figured nidmeh from kilayim. Eloi, amos the rabois. If you're going to say that both ois are inclusionary, trei ribui ulama, why would you need two inclusions? Hashta kilayim irbile. Once you've included kilayim as being suitable and eligible to serve as a sacrifice, where the two parents are different, you've got a real mixed breed on your hand, and still you're going to include it as kosher. Nidmeh, what I have to tell you, what I have to include scripturally the nidmeh as being kosher, that would be obvious. The Gemara now focuses on what we mentioned earlier, Rava's teaching. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, which is combined with a structural note. A house shape appears. This is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take style Gemara. With the top of the house facing upwards, kushya represents a question. Lagabi eza halacha tsrifin halimud shel habinyan av de rova lahoitzi es hakilayim. Regarding what halacha do I need Rava's teaching? Rava said, oh, there's a word said that sets a rule that wherever it appears, we exclude kilayim. So where in halacha am I going to apply Rava's rule? The reason that the Gemara is asking this will become evident as we go through the long question. When you see, however, the inverted house, that represents a tshuva, a response. The double underlines that you'll see in the Gemara are dugma'ois. There are different examples, shebahem, mematim, kilayim. Different examples in halacha where we exclude kilayim. The problem is that in each one of the examples, there is a local gezeiras hakosuv, a local scriptural exclusion of kilayim. When I say local, means within the topics themselves, you have a special exclusion of kilayim, a specific exclusion of kilayim. I don't need some type of general rule that Rava teaches in order to accomplish that exclusion. So now, the Gemara. Note that we have a long question marking with a number of examples of halacha where, in fact, a kilayim type animal is excluded. The Gemara. Elaha diyama Rava. That which Rava said, Ze bonahav kol mokom shenemar se. Wherever you see the word say, no elu lohitzias of kilayim, the Torah's purpose is to exclude the mixed breed. Lamai hilchasa, regarding what halacha is this said? E lekodshim, if it's with regard to the exclusion of kilayim as a mixed breed from serving as a sacrifice. Well, behed yoksibu, we just saw this before. It said, shor oy kesev leprat lekilayim. We excluded kilayim through the word oy in that particular pasuk, not based on Rava's rule. Oy, it says e lemeiser. If the exclusion of kilayim is regarding the realm of meiser, meiser is a reference to meiser behema. It's a tithe that a person separates from his annual animal births. Every tenth animal, after he counts them, 1 through 10 each time, the number 10 is designated as a special sacrifice called Meiser Behema. Regarding Meiser Behema, we tell you that Kilayim would not qualify as a Meiser Behema. So if I exclude Kilayim from the realm of Meiser Behema, where do I learn that from? Tachas, Yolif, Mikotshim. The word Tachas appears in the context of sacrifices and in the context of Meiser Behema. And through that word comparison, throughout Gezeirah Shava, I know to exclude Kilayim. Not from Rava's rule, though. E lebechor, regarding a firstborn male animal. We will tell you that if it's a firstborn from mixed bred parents, so kilayim will not qualify as a bechor firstborn, which also is a sacrifice. It's an animal, firstborn male animal is given to a kohen who brings it to the Beis Hamikdash as a sacrifice. If we're dealing with a firstborn kilayim, that would be excluded from the bechor sanctity. Ha'avora, ha'avora, yolif, mimaiser. The word ya'avor appears in the context of maiser, and it says, by a bechor, it says, v'havarta kol peta rechem l'ashem. So that verb form, ha'avora, ayin beis resh is the root, you have similar words, by bechor and maiser, and by maiser we already established that it was derived from kachim. So I have this new Gezeira Shava, which enables me to learn Bechor from Meiser, thereby excluding Kilayim. Inami, another Hesper why Bechor, why the case of Bechor does not need Rava's rule in order to exclude Kelayim. I'll tell you why I don't need Rava's rule. Nidme Amris Lo. By Bechor, we know that a Nidme is not Bekedushas Bechor, doesn't achieve Bechor sanctity, Dechtiv. Ach Bechor Shor. And we learn from this Pasuk, Ad Shiehu Shor Bechoro Shor. We want to have a situation where the parent is Shor and the offspring looks like a Shor. And if the offspring doesn't look like a Shor, it's called a Nidme. Even though the parents are both cows, the offspring, if it doesn't look like them, is excluded from Bechor. Kilayim, Ibaya, what I need to tell you that Kilayim is excluded. Once I know that even something that's that sounds sounds acceptable as a Bechor is not, certainly Kilayim, which has which is a mixed breed, is going to be excluded. So I learn the exclusion of Kilayim from the fact that we've excluded Nidme according to this approach. But I don't learn the exclusion of Kilayim by Bechor from Rava's rule. Where are we then going to apply Rava's rule? So we answer, Eloki Itmar de Rava, that which Rava says that Seh excludes Kilayim, Le'inyin Pidyon Petr Chamor. We added the word Pidyon based on Rashi's Girsa regarding the law concerning redemption of a firstborn donkey. The Torah speaks of a firstborn donkey. If you want to benefit from it and not have to kill it, you will have to redeem it onto another animal. Redeem it. In the course of the redemption, I just want to point out that what we're saying here is in very general terms. There's an entire tractate called Bechoros. There are many details regarding laws of redemption, but we're not focusing on all of the details. But suffice it to say that the firstborn a donkey needs to be redeemed if you want to benefit from it. One of the things onto which you cannot redeem it, transfer its sanctity, happens to be an animal that's a mixed breed. Kidisnan. Ein poidin, we don't redeem the firstborn donkey, lo be'egel, v'lo b'chaya, v'lo b'shchuta, v'lo b'treifa, v'lo b'kilayim, v'lo b'koi. There are a number of things that are listed here. We don't have to focus on them. We can translate, but the main thing is that we dashed underline Kilayim. You cannot redeem firstborn donkey, the Petr Chamor, on a mixed breed. So in the source it said you can't redeem on an eagle, on a calf, on a chai, on an undomesticated type animal, on lo b'shchuta, not on a slaughtered animal, and not on a trefa, an animal with an organ or limb deficiency, nor on a mixed breed. And not velo b'koi. A koi, Rashi makes reference to the koi. It's an animal that results from the mating of a domesticated with an undomesticated type animal. So, once again, just to repeat, Rava said that where you see the word se, you exclude kilayim. In the realm of Petah Chamor, so Rashi points out the word se appears. Oh, so the word se appears. I know that I can't redeem the firstborn donkey on a mixed breed. Question. Ula Rebbe Elazar Damatir Bekilayim. Rebbe Elazar, the Tana Rebbe Elazar says, you can redeem firstborn donkey on a mixed breed. It's not. Rebbe Elazar Matir Bekilayim Ibnei Shu Se. He is matir it on that because, as far as Rebbe Elazar is concerned, even if there's partial set, partial sheep in the background of the animal, that's enough to consider it suitable for redemption purposes. So, lemai hilchasa, what will I need Rava for? Omar loch Rebbe Elazar, ki itmar de Rava, Rava's rule that where you see the word set, it's going to exclude a mixed breed. It is useful. That teaching has bearing. Lamtome shenoylad min hatohar viburo min hatome. The words here, tome and tohar, especially the word tome, is not what you think. The Gemara, in the course of this discussion, will ask, how in the world can an unkosher variety animal, which is a tome, how could it possibly mate with a kosher variety animal, which is referenced by the word tohor, and have an offspring that results from that? So you notice that we have an angular brackets. The Gemara at the top of Amud Bey says, "The aber mikolut kerebi Shimon." Kolut is we're dealing with a non-split hoofed animal, but it is a mutation because here we're talking about a kosher variety animal that was born with a closed hoof. Kolut, closed hoof, it's uncloven hoof. So Rabbi Lozer, who was willing to include Kilayim for Pidyon Peter Chamor, he will apply Rava's rule to tell me that a Tome, and that again, I emphasize that word is going to be clarified by the Gemara, but it's a reference to that situation where this mutation type animal was born, and it's telling me you cannot eat it. If we look in Rashi, L'tomei shenolad min hator, Rashi says, para, a cow, shiolda, sus, the aviv sus. Rashi here is explaining the words in a literal fashion, tomei, that was born from a tohor. Tomei is an unkosher variety animal, and you have a mother cow that gave birth to what appears as a horse, and the father was a horse. I'm telling you now that pshat will be changed as we go on in the Gemara. So now we go back to the Gemara. We explain the angular brackets. So we now go back to the text and notice another kind of brackets, the curlicue type brackets. Regarding these, we have a note as well on the side, and it says, Besoch Sograim Elu, who owed Shita. There's another opinion, She Oiseres Vachila, Tomei Shenolad Minator, Viburo Minatome, describing the birth of the unusual as being usher prohibited to eat. Aval Eno Mevusas Al Binyanav de Rava. However, he, in order to come to his conclusion, he doesn't use Rava's binyanav, Rava's general rule teaching from before. So, Rabbi Lozer, in our Gemara, we read again, Omar Loch Rabbi Lozer, we're reading where you see the inverted house. Rabbi Lozer will tell you, Ki itmar de Rava, Rava's teaching of Seh, excluding Kilayim, L'tome shenolad min hator, v'iburo min hatome. That's the main answer. The subsequent discussion is tangential, but that's the main answer. We have found a use for Rava's binyanah, for Rava's rule concerning seh. Now, this answer is, we continue reading in the bracketed section, Udoloka Rabbi Yeshua. Does this use of Rava's teaching to exclude this scenario is not like Rabbi Yeshua's approach. D'i Rabbi Yeshua, regarding the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua, he learns the exclusion of that unusual birth. However, misek savim v'se rizim nafgale. He learns it from that pasuk, from which we learn, at shiehe aviv keves v'imo kivsa. What can you eat? You can eat the birth of an animal whose father and mother were both sheep, both of, we'll say, like variety. So that which Rabbi Lozer uses to exclude Kilayim from the realm of being allowed to eat, Rabbi Yeshua has a different source to the exclusion of that that type of mixed breed. The Gemara now asks the question in terms of reality, in terms of actual biology. Utahora mitamea mimabra. You described a few lines ago a tomei becoming impregnated by a tohor and giving birth, and we're saying that the birth is excluded. Can that happen in terms of physiology and reproduction? In yes, it can happen provided you define tomei differently than you thought till now. The Kaimalon, we hold and we continue at the top of Omid Beis. The Aber Mikolut Kerebi Shimon. We get to the point at which or concerning which Rebbe Shimon says his din. We have a little diagram on the side of the Gemara in the upper corner. Poro and Par, a male and female cow mate. Those are two kosher variety animals, and they give birth to something called a kolot. A kolot, it probably has the same DNA as the parents have. However, its hoof is not cloven. It's an uncloven, it's a closed hoof. It's called a kolot. Rabbi Shimon prohibits the eating of that. And Rashi goes through an extensive presentation of the scriptural basis for Rabbi Shimon's opinion. But for our purposes, if you're going to ask the question, what do I need Rava's drosha for when we say to exclude an animal? So we need it to exclude we'll say situations like this. I want to go one step further. That case of Pora and Par producing a kolot is actually a situation where Rabbi Shimon alone prohibits, but Rabbi Yeshua allows. Where do you have a case where even Rabbi Yeshua will prohibit? And I have to say, this is really the case where you have the need to exclude kilayim. What's kilayim? Kilayim indicates a mixed breed, where the example we cited just before wasn't the focus of our Gemara's discussion. The example we cited before, the Pora and the Par, is background information showing you how far Rabbi Shimon goes. Rabbi Shimon says that even if both parents are of the same nature, both totally normal parents, and the offspring is a kolot, that kolot is prohibited according to Rabbi Shimon. What happens, and now I want to describe the case that, for which we will need either Rava's Gezeres, Rava's Binyan Av, or Rabbi Yoshua's Sek Sovim, Seizim, to exclude something. What are we going to exclude through these means? The next case you see on the side of the Gemara, a Pora, female cow, is impregnated by a male cow that's kolot. Now that is an example of tomei as far as our discussion is concerned. The vlad, the offspring, in that case, is prohibited both according to Rabbi Shimon and according to Rabbi Yoshua. This we would describe as a case of kilayim. The par is called tohor. The male cow, the bull, that has uncloven hooves, is called tomei, and the offspring will be prohibited. How do you know the offspring is prohibited? According to Rava, it's based on the se word, that is the binyanav to exclude kilayim. And according to Rabbi Yeshua, so he had his own gzeres hakosav, we have that in the brackets, misek savim v'se izim. Before we continue in the Gemara, let's glance at the side where we have a Nosei Mivneh Hering. A diamond is featured, as maybe you saw already in the Gemara text. They are Shnei Lishoinois Barava, two versions of Rava. Benosei, in the topic of Mi Shehifri Shor LeKorban Oiloso. Imagine someone set aside an ox to serve as his burnt offering, a korban ola. An ox is a large, expensive type animal. Ubo achir veganvo. Someone came and stole it. Hai ganav haim tzorach lahachzir dafke shor. This thief, does he have to return specifically an ox? Namely, he stole the man's sacrifice. An ox, he has to return an ox. Oi efsher gam. Balchai pochus yokar, or maybe the thief can return something of lesser value, an animal of lesser value, shigam koshilola, that would also be suitable as a burnt offering. The Torah enables one to fulfill his ola, if he decides to pledge an ola, through different kinds of animals. It's not restricted only to an ox. We will see an ox represents an expensive type animal whereby you are fulfilling the mitzvah in a choice way. We call that a mitzvah min amuvchar. The thief, when he returns to compensate for the theft, does he need to return only an ox, or we'll say the value of an ox, or possibly a lesser value animal, which would also be suitable to serve as a Korban Ola. Now, the Gemara. Boy Rava. Hare Olai Ola. A man accepted upon himself the responsibility of bringing and Korban Ola. Vehifrishor, and he set aside in fulfillment of his vow, an ox. Ubo achir v'gonav, and someone came and stole the ox. Mi potar ganav nafshe, the thief, in order to exempt himself, in order to atone for his sin of stealing, he has an obligation to return something to the owner. Bekeves l'rabbonon ba'ilasai if they're b'lazer ben Azaria. These are two Tanaic opinions that will be featured in the bracketed section of the Gemara in a moment. But our question is, in terms of return, the return obligation of the thief, can he fulfill his obligation through returning lesser value animals? How much less? Well, according to the Rabbonan that we'll see, though he stole an ox, let him return a sheep. According to Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah, though he stole an ox, he can return a bird which can serve as a what's called an ola sa'of, a bird ola offering. And we have, as we mentioned, a bracketed section where you see the two opinions we just referred to. And if we skip the brackets momentarily, Mia will then see the two sides of the question that we raised. You stole an expensive type animal. Can the thief redeem himself, so to speak? Can he do his penitence by returning the lesser value? And as you see after the brackets, Mi amrinon shame oyla kabulole al dilma, or maybe motzi amalei ano mitzvah menamuv rabbeinu lemevad. What do we say here? The original owner, do we say that he accepted upon himself to bring something called an oyla, and if you return anything that could be called an oyla, you have fulfilled your obligation? Or maybe the owner can insist on saying, listen, I intended to fulfill a mitzvah in the choice way, in the choicest way, and you stole from me that means of fulfillment. So you have to return to me an animal that's through which I would mekayim the mitzvah mena mufchor, the choicest way of fulfilling the mitzvah. We'll go over this again, but first let's read through the Gemara straight now with the brackets. We mentioned two Tanaic opinions, a keves. According to the Rabbonon, Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah saying even a bird, desnan. Hare olai oila. Yovi keves, a person who accepted upon himself to bring an ola offering. The Tanakhama says, by accepting an ola, bring a sheep. Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah, Omer Yovi, tor o ben Yona. Reb Elazar says, bring Torah ben yonah, types of kosher variety birds suitable for sacrifices. Bring a tor or a ben yonah. My. Well, what we see in that Tanaic source is that a keves, according to the Rabbanan, fulfills an ola vow. According to Rabbi and Raziah, an ola vow can be fulfilled through the bringing of a bird offering. So what about in our case, the thief and his need to compensate? Me, Amrinon, do we say shame oilo kabaliliya? The original owner who set aside the ox had really accepted upon himself when he said hare olai ola, he accepted upon himself an obligation to bring an ola, whatever is called an ola. Oh, whatever is called an ola? Well, a sheep is called an ola. A bird, according to Rabbi Elazar Nazai, is called an ola. Can be called an ola if he sanctifies them thusly. So the thief could fulfill his responsibilities with these lesser kind of creatures. Lesser relative to the ox. Oy dilma, or maybe motzi or malay. Maybe the balabayas, the victim of the theft, can say to the thief, ano? Mitzvah min amuvchor bo'in olamevar. I wanted to fulfill the mitzvah, bringing a sacrifice, in the choicest way. So you have to enable me to do exactly that by returning ashore. Bosur debaya hader poshat. After Rava raised the question, he then answered. He answered like the aleph in our aleph oydilma base, like the first possibility. He said, Ganav poter atzmo, the Ganav can redeem himself, can free himself, or fulfill his return obligations. Bekeves l'rabbonan, be'ilas ha'oif l'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Rav Acha brei d'Rav Ika masni lo behedya. This is our second version, where he presents Rava not as raising a question and then answering it, but rather as a straightforward teaching. Omar Rava, hare olai oila, fehifri shoru bo'achir v'gonvo. Someone accepted upon himself to bring an ola offering, and he set aside an ox, and someone came and stole the animal. Poter atzmo, the thief exempts himself returns, frees himself from his sin by returning bekeves l'rabbonon uba'oila sa'if l'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And now the new Mishnah. Mochroi chutz me'echod mimea shavo. The thief sold the stolen animal, but not in its entirety. Except for, he sold it almost entirely, except for 1/100th of it. So he sold 99% of the animal while retaining ownership of 1%. Oy shahoisa loy boy shutfis. Or, we're talking about a man that had a partnership in the animal before he committed the theft. In other words, he stole from his partner. Hashochet v'nisnablo biyado. He attempted to slaughter it, but there was a mess up in the slaughter, and therefore the resultant animal is called a nevela. So it's not an effective shchita. Hanocher. Nocher is a form of killing the animal. Rashi has a pshat, ripping into its nose till you rip down till its heart. There's another pshat that's quoted on the side. He strangled the animal. The ma'akir. Ma'akir is a form of ripping out as opposed to slicing the neck organs. He ripped them out. Mishalem tashlumei kefel. He'll pay double for the theft. Ve'enu mishalem tashlumei arba v'chamisha. But in the examples we saw here of the sales or the shechita mess up, there. These kind of sales or shechita descriptions or killing descriptions will not result in the 4-5 payment. In order for a sale to result in the 4-5 payment, it would have to be a sale of complete prohibition. If you already had 50% ownership in the animal, so the the sale of such an animal that you already had a holding in it. It was not a, you didn't sell it completely in prohibition. You were allowed certainly to sell your own half. Likewise, with regard to the slaughtering, I should say, and also with regard to the slaughtering, the Torah requires a formal, acceptable, complete, kosher kind of slaughtering, not the killing of an animal or a mess up in the slaughtering. That is not what the Torah intended when it imposed the 4 or 5 payment. The Mishnah opened. The Mishnah mentioned the sale with, but the withholding of 1/100th. My chutz me'echod mimei shabbat. What do you mean by that? We're going to see now a machlokas, Rav and Levi, whose names you can see we've highlighted. How to explain that expression of chutz me'echod mimei shabbat, what is considered a withholding? The sale, in order for a sale to be a sale, has to be a complete sale, not a sale that involves your withholding. What was withheld in terms of the Mishnah that says you held 1/100th? Omar Rav, chutz midover hanitar imoy b'shchita. 1/100th of the meat. Not 1/100th of the total value of the animal, which might include its wool, its whiskers, or its horns. That's not considered a withholding. A withholding that would exempt from the 4 or 5 would be a withholding of the meat. Why specifically the meat, as opposed to the other things we mentioned? Because the meat is something that requires the act of shechita in order for it to be beneficial to you, in order for you to be able to eat it. The other examples, the shearings, the wool, the horns, those things can be removed from the animal even without the slaughtering of the animal. So Rav's conception of withholding is a withholding of something that requires the shechita. That is specifically the meat, the basar. The Levi Omar chutz migizosel. Levi goes much further and says, when we speak about withholding 1/100th, even if it happens to be the shearings, you figure the entire value of the animal, you sold it minus part of its shearings, which would account for a small fraction of the entire value, that nevertheless would be a sale that has a shiur to it, a withholding, and hence it's not the sale that the Torah would obligate the 4 or 5 payment. V'chein Tanya b'masisa, Levi is also the author of Tanaic Sources, and in his Tanaic Source, he teaches our Mishnah in an explicit fashion, chutz migizosel. That means, in his version of the Mishnah, it would say, mochroi, the thief sold it, chutz migizosel. And the result of that would be, there's no payment of the additional amounts, 4 or 5, the payments that would extend beyond the basic kefel for the theft. And now we raise a question, Meisvei. We have a Tanaic source. Following the framed section, the Gemara will say, Bishlamo LeLevi. Levi has a Tanaic authority on whom to base his opinion. In this Tanaic source, we're going to see 3 different opinions. He'll have a Tanaic authority. Amoroyim, unless they're saying, making some type of independent statement, but if an Amora deals with a topic that's dealt with already by Tanoim, it's essential that the Amora has a Tanaic basis, or certainly not to run against a Tanaic source. Levi has a Tanaic basis for his point of view. But Rav, as after we go through all of these opinions, we're going to find that Rav doesn't seem to have upon whom to rely. In other words, Rav said an opinion of what constitutes shiur, dover, anita, ima, b'shchita, but none of the Tanoim that we see seem to say like him. So the Gemara then will answer, well, Rav does have a Tanaic authority, and will produce that that additional Tanaic authority in a Tanaic source that follows afterwards. In other words, you'll see a second frame section, and in that second frame section, Rav will find the basis for his opinion. After we find a basis for Rav's opinion, the Gemara will be asking, what is the basis of all of these different Tanoim? Where do they come off, each one having a different opinion on describing what constitutes a non-sale? What constitutes a withholding so that the sale is not a complete sale? Now let's go to our Gemara text, Meisvei. We start reading the long frame section. Mochra, the thief sold it. Chutz mi yada, chutz mi ragla, chutz mi karna. He sold it except for its front leg. The yad is the hand, the front leg of the animal. The ragla, the hind leg of the animal. Or chutz mi karna, he sold it the animal except for its horns. Chutz mi gizusa, the whole animal sold except for its shearings. In other words, the items mentioned here were withheld by the thief when he conducted the sale. Eino mishalim shulim arba v'chamisha. There's no additional multiple payment for a sale like this. Rebbe Omer, dover ha'ma'akev b'shchita, eino mishalim tashlim arba v'chamisha. V'sheino ma'akev b'shchita, mishalim tashlim arba v'chamisha. Rebbe holds only the withholding of that part of the animal, that if you were to remove it from the animal while the animal is still alive, the animal would be deemed a nevela. Even though it might still appear alive, it would be considered as good as dead. Rebbe says that if the thief withholds, we'll call it a crucial organ of the animal, only if he withholds something like that, that's called me'akev b'shchita, something that without which you couldn't do the shchita. If you withhold something of that significance, then the sale is not a sale. However, if you withhold, let us say, the front leg of an animal, technically speaking, if an animal is missing a part of its front leg, the animal still can be slaughtered and you can eat it. That is not a crucial, critical part of the animal. So, if according to Rebbe, if you were to withhold something that's non-crucial, it would be considered a complete sale. Reb Shimon ben Elazar Omer, chutz mikarna. If a person, if a thief sold the animal and withheld the horn, eino mishalim tashlim arba v'chamisha. That's considered a withholding, and hence it's not a sale that would result in the 4 or 5 payment. However, chutz migizoseho, if the thief withheld the shearings, mishalim tashlim arba v'chamisha, he would have to pay. That's not a significant enough withholding. We've just seen 3 Tanaic opinions. Bishlama Lelevi Kitana Kama. Levi works out according to the first opinion, very simply because the first opinion had included in his withholdings that would exempt from the 4 or 5 even the withholdings of shearings. That's what Levi said. Elo LaRav Kiman, Rav's opinion, upon whom is it based? It doesn't correspond to any of the opinions we saw. Amri, Rav di Omar ki hai tana. Rav would correspond to the following Tanaic point of view. Desanya, Reb Shimon ben Elazar Omer. Now, you might note that this name appeared in the source before. We had him as Roman numeral number 3, and we called it number 1. 3-1, because that was the first presentation of Shmuel Elazar. Here we have another presentation of the same authority, but you'll see it's a different teaching that he has. Reb Shmuel Elazar Omer Mochra, person, the thief sold it, chutz mi yada, the chutz mi ragla. He withheld in the sale, he withheld for himself the the front leg or the hind leg, Eino Mishamish L'Me'arba V'Chamisha. That's considered a significant withholding, and hence, no 4 or 5. Chutz Mikarna, Chutz Migizizea, withholding the horn, withholding the shearings, that's not called a withholding. That's called a complete sale. Mishalem Tashum L'Arba V'Chamisha. You will have to pay the 4 or 5. So, here we have an opinion that reflects what Rav said. The front leg or hind leg of the animal, you could not eat unless you shecht it. That's Dover HaNitar Imo B'Shechita. The horn and the shearing is not something that you eat to begin with. Shechita is irrelevant regarding those parts of the animal. And hence, withholding those is not considered a shiur, a withholding, a lack in the sale, and therefore he would pay the 4 or 5 if he sold it withholding those things. B'mai komifligi. The triangles that you see highlight the different Tanaic authorities, and how now we offer a hesber, an explanation for each one. Tanakama sovar. The Tanakama of the long source, the first opinion holds, Utvachoi kulo bo'inon. Umechoroi kulo bo'inon. Just like tvacho, the slaughtering, is a complete slaughtering, so too the mechira is, that's parallel to it, must be a complete sale. Any withholding makes it an incomplete sale, and hence it's not like tvacho. It's not like the case of slaughtering, where you slaughtered the animal entirely owned by the victim. We need to have a parallel. So just like tvacho is a case where you slaughtered in its entirety the owned animal, so too the sale must be a complete sale. Rebbe Sovar Utvacho. The word tvacho means midi dahave bitvicha. That kind of animal that could be slaughtered. So only the withholding of that organ that would render it ineligible for slaughtering would be considered a withholding. Lafuke midi delo havia betvicha. To the exclusion of a case where you might have withheld a part of the animal, but it wouldn't have removed it from the realm of slaughtering. That's what tvacho implies. Umacharoi dumya de tvacho, and mechira, the standard we apply to sale, has to be similar to the standard we apply to tvicha. So far, you can see that Tanakama and Rebbe evaluate sales the same way we look at the definition of utvacho of the Torah in terms of the way we look at slaughtering. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Osovar. Rabbi Shimon Elazar doesn't deal with a comparison between mechira and tvicha, but he has his conclusion, or his teaching is based on the following. He holds karna, the horn of an animal, delola migza. Migza means to be cut off. Delola migza kaima. It's not something that is there on an animal to be cut off. It's an integral part of the animal. It's not something designed to be cut off. Have a shiur, that withholding that in a sale, withholding the horn for the yourself, in the case of a thief that sells, that's considered a withholding, a significant withholding. The Einoi Mishan Shum Arba V'Chamisha. And therefore, a sale like that, where the thief withholds possession or ownership of the horn, is not a sale. Gizo Seha. The shearings, the hair of the animal, the lemegas kaimi. Certainly, if you're dealing with a sheep, it's easy to see that it's there to be shorn, it's there to be cut off. And now something like that, okay, it's growing from the animal, but its destiny is to be separated from the animal. Lo havishior, according to Reb Shimon Melozer, number one, withholding gizos. Shearings is not considered a withholding of significance. Therefore, you will have to pay the multiple payments, even though it's a sale where there was that withholding, but it's an insignificant withholding because lemeg is kaimi. It's destined to be removed from the animal anyway. V'idach Tana debay Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Savar, the other presentation of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that was number 3-2, which was the basis for Rav's opinion. Savar, he holds, Yadav v'raglov d'tzrichi t'vicha havishir v'lo mishan z'shumei arba v'chamisha. The legs of the animal that, in order for you to benefit from them, to eat them, slaughtering is required. Slaughtering is required. Oh, so therefore, the standard that we apply to slaughtering will apply to sale as well. And in the case of a sale, it would be considered a shiur if the thief withheld them in the sale. Horns and shearings that you can benefit from even without needing to slaughter the animal. Lo havishir, in the case of a sale, it wouldn't be considered a withholding. As was quite obvious in our discussion and in our markings, we saw Reb Shimon ben Elazar appear twice, each time saying something different. Kashya de Reb Shimon ben Elazar ad Reb Shimon Elazar. Are we to then say we have a contradiction within this authority? No. Trei tanoi valiba de Reb Shimon ben Elazar. What we're seeing, in effect, is a later presentation, chronologically speaking, later Tanoim, that were giving their versions of what Reb Shimon ben Elazar said. Tanu Rabbanan, Hagoinev Hakitas, Vesachigeres Vesasuma. A thief stole an animal that was kitas. It was had a limb cut off, or it was chigeres, it was lame, or it was blind. Rashi says, as a chitas, afagav deleko kulo, even though it's not a complete animal. And these other examples, it's an animal that's lacking. V'chein ha-geinev behemas ashutfin chayov, v'ashutfin shegonvu pturin. Goinev behemas ashutfin is a thief stole an animal that was owned by two people. All of those cases, with the exception of the last case of Shutfin Shengonvu, the previous cases are chayav. He has to pay for the theft. It's considered a theft resulting in the kefel, the double payment. The subsequent, sale of those animals would result in the 4-5 payment. The resultant slaughtering of those animals would result in the 4-5 payment. However, v'shutfin shegonvu pturin. What is that a reference to? We're going to see shortly through a contradictory source, a clarification of what this case really is referring to. So it's premature for us to say anything about it. V'ha tanya shutfin shegonvu chayovin. Here we have a source that says shutfin, partners that steal, are obligated in the multiple payments. So we have a contradiction. The first source ended off by saying v'shutfin shegonvu pturin. They are shutfin partners that steal and subsequent sell are exempt from the 4-5 payment. And here we have shutfin shegonvu, partners that steal are obligated in the 4-5 payment for the subsequent sale. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice a new geometric form, a volcano shape. And on the side, under our Nosei Mivne heading, we indicate that these shapes are Shnei Shlavim, two stages, Shel Tshuvos, two stages of answers, Shel Rav Nachman, that Rav Nachman offers, Liyashiv Stira Bebraises Binyan Shutfin Shigonvu. We have to resolve this contradiction, so we'll do so through two stages of Rav Nachman answers. The Gemara. Omar Rav Nachman lo kashya. There's no contradiction. Kan b'shutif shegonav mechaveroi, kan b'shutif shegonav mealmo. The source that indicated exemption is a case where the partner stole from his friend, from his partner. See, partner stole from partner. The source that indicated obligation is a shutif shigonav me'almo, partners that stole from some outside party. Esve Rava l'Rav Nachman. Rava raises a contradiction or a kasha, a question on Rav Nachman. Yochol shutif shigonav me'chaveroi v'shutfin shigonvu yehei chayavim. Could it be that they would be obligated in the multiple payments? Talmud Loimar, Utvachoi, Kuloi, Bo'inon Veleka. The Torah speaks about slaughtering, Utvacho, and Tvacho Omechoroi. It has to be a complete slaughtering in prohibition in order to result in the 4-5 payment. And in these examples, that's lacking. So that you can see in this source, Shutif Shigonav Mechaveroi and Shutfin Shigonvu are on the same plane, whereas Rav Nachman's answer was based on a distinction between the two. Let us take a look at Rashi together. Shutif Shigonav Mechaveroi, Rashi says, Potur Me'arbo V'chamisha, a partner that stole from his friend, he's exempt from the 4 or 5 afilu mechelik chavero, even with regard to the portion of his friend. He doesn't pay his friend's his friend 4 or 5 the time 4 or 5 times the value of his holding in it. The lekut vacho kulo bisura, the slaughtering of an animal owned by partners. If it was an issue of slaughtering, the slaughtering wouldn't be completely in a state of prohibition. And hence, a shutif that steals from his friend and then would, let us say, sell it, it would not be a sale of complete prohibition. He has his own, he has 50% holding in it or a portion of it. So we have to find a new resolution for the two sources. One source said Shutfit Shigonvu Turin, the other says Shutfit Shigonvu Chayovin, and you can't make a distinction based on partner stealing from his friend versus partners stealing from outsider. Elo Omar Rav Nachman, second stage. Both of the sources of Shutfit Shigonvu are referring to Shutfin that stole from an outside party. Lok and Elomar of Nachmon, Lokashia. Kan, the source that indicates guilt, Beshutif Shetovach Ladas Chavero. The fellows, these two fellows stole together. They committed the theft in partnership. And let's say they both dragged out the animal from wherever it was staying. And one of them slaughtered with the knowledge, with the approval and knowledge of his friend. In the realm of slaughtering and sales, we have a concept contrary to the rest of the Torah. The concept here, yesh shliach ledvar avera. The concept of shlichus applies here, meaning, even though only one of the partners did the act of slaughtering, but since it was with the knowledge of his partner, his act reflects back on the other one. So that if it's a case of the theft having been committed by partners and one of them does the slaughtering, that's the case of Shutfin Shegonvu Chayov, and that was the second source. And we understand why in a case like that there would be 4 or 5. Kan b'shutif shetovach shelo ledas chavero. The source that indicates exemption from the 4 or 5 is where the slaughtering was done without the knowledge of the other one. Let us look together at the Rashi on the first line under the under the Gemara text, Shutiv Shetovach Shelo Ledaz Chavero, Potter Deleka Utvachai Kula B'chiyuva. In the case where one of the two thieves that stole in partnership slaughtered without the knowledge of the other, you don't have a slaughtering that's completely with obligation. Regarding the half stolen by the other one, he's not his agent for slaughtering. It's like a case of someone, let us say, slaughtering an animal that was already stolen. The potter, there is exemption. The al chelkunami potter, on his own holding of it, he's also exempt. Hayol v'lekutvachol kula b'chiyuva, since the entire slaughtering was not done in a state of prohibition or in a state of obligation. Before continuing in the Gemara, we glance briefly at the side. We have a topic heading, which reads, Gonva chutz me'ubra. A man stole an animal and then sold it, but withheld the fetus of the animal. He withheld the as yet unborn animal. Does that constitute a complete mechira, or does that constitute, like we spoke above, does it constitute a withholding? Now the Gemara. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah. Mochra, if we skip the brackets for a moment, chutz me'ubra mahu. The Gemara continues in its analysis, focusing on this case. The brackets that we have simply highlight the fact that the Gemara is not going to be analyzing the first two of the three cases that Rav Yirmiyah asks about. So let's read the Gemara again. Boy, Rav Yirmiyah, mochra chutz mishloishim yoim. The thief stole an animal, and then he says to a purchaser, "Listen, I'm selling you this animal, but I'm withholding it for the next 30 days." During which time I'm going to use it for my own purposes. Is that considered a sale? And I saw in the commentaries featured in the Shita Mekubetzes, the question here is it considered a sale immediately or not? Because upon arranging the sale, he's already indicating a withholding of the animal for 30 days. Another example, chutz mimalachta. The thief sells the animal and says to the purchaser, "Listen, if you want to slaughter the animal, go ahead and do so immediately. However, if you're going to use the animal for work, for labor purposes, you should know it's mine regarding its malacha." So is a sale like that, where you're selling the animal for slaughtering purposes, but not for labor purposes. Is that considered a partial sale or not? Chutz me'ubra mahu. You stole an animal. Let's say you stole a pregnant animal, and you sold it to the purchaser, but said, "I'm selling you," but withholding ownership of the unborn. Aliba demande omar ubar yerech imoy hu lo tiboy aloch deha shirba. According to the approach of some that views the unborn as an extension of the mother, as like the leg of the mother. So there's no question that would constitute a withholding. We saw above, for example, we saw Shitas Rav. Parts of any part of the animal that requires Shchita before you can eat from it, and you withhold that would be considered a withholding. The unborn, if you were, let us to say, slaughter the mother, the unborn can be eaten based on the slaughtering of the mother. In other words, in order to eat the unborn animal, you need to have the mother slaughtered. So that is an example of something that requires shechita in order to be matir, in order for it to be allowed to be eaten. So as far as the opinion that says ubar yerech imo, who? It's no different than yerech is a leg of an animal, just like we saw above Rav saying that withholding the leg of an animal is considered a withholding and hence an incomplete sale. Kiti boy aloch alibo demandi amar ubar lav yerech imo mayak. The question that Rav Yirmiyahu raises is a question according to the approach that does not view the fetus as a mere extension of the mother, but rather the ubar has an independent identity. My. Still there's room to ask the question. Is withholding the ubar considered a withholding or not? And here you're going to see there are two sides of analysis. That's highlighted by the Aleph, the little Aleph that you see in our Mark Gemaras, and next line, Oy Dilma Beis. In addition, though, we have a Roman numeral marking that highlights, that's going to highlight two versions, two Lashonos. Then we'll see, that will become clearer as we go through the Gemara itself. So the question has been raised within the opinion that ubar lav yerech imo mai mei maram rinon. Do we say kevon de mechuber bo havishir? Since the ubar is attached to the mother, withholding it is considered a withholding, and hence it's not a complete sale. No 4 or 5. Oy dilma kevon de mifresh mino koi lo havishir. Since on the other hand, it's something that will be separated in its birth. It will be separated. So it's not considered as a withholding. It's considered a totally independent entity. Iko the Amri, another version. Kevon the lav yerech imoihu lo havishur. Since it's not like the leg of the mother, it's independent. It's not considered a withholding. You're not withholding any part of the mother that you're selling. Oiduma. Since, on the other hand, it requires shechita to enable it, lishtriya means to become allowed to be eaten. Since it needs the shechita of the mother in order to be eaten, the fetus to be eaten, keman d'shir beguf adomi. It's as if there was a withholding in the mother itself. And hence, it would not be considered a complete sale. You withheld a part of the mother in that sense. Teku. So this remains unresolved, the issue of withholding of the as yet unborn, according to the opinion that ubar lav yerech imo. Boi rova. Gonva kot'a umachra mahu. A man stole an animal, cut off a limb, and then sold it. What is the din? Mi amrinon, do we say, my deganav holos oven? That which he stole is not that which he sold. And therefore there would be no 4 or 5 payment. Oy dilmo, ma dezoven holoshir. Or do you say, with regard to that which he sold, he didn't withhold anything. So it's a complete sale. Teku. This remains unresolved. Tonu Rabbonon. Gonav. A man stole an animal. V'nosan li'achi v'tovach. And he presented it to someone else to do the slaughtering. In other words, the thief himself didn't do the slaughtering. He appointed an agent to do the slaughtering. Rashi emphasizes here, not to make a mistake, that v'nosan means he gave it as a gift to someone else. And I would like to emphasize or add to that the issue of stealing and then giving as a gift is something mentioned at the top of Ayin Tes Amud Aleph. So this part of the source is not dealing with giving of a gift. It's dealing with simply appointing someone as agent to slaughter. Gonav v'nosan li'achir mochar. He stole an animal and appointed someone else to conduct the sale. We continue at the top of Ayin Tes. Gonav v'hikdish. I want to emphasize that this part of the source is referred to later in the Gemara as the Seifa. The word Seifa would be wrongfully translated as the end. As you can see, we're far from the end of the source. However, Seifa is an expression that indicates the continuation of the source, something to, we'll say, the exclusion of the very beginning of the source. So this is not the very beginning, hence we're calling this the Seifa. It says, Gonav v'hikdish, he stole and then sanctified the animal. Gonav v'hikif, he stole an animal and then sold it on credit. The thief didn't receive cash. He waited. He sold it on credit. Gonav v'hichlif, he stole an animal and then exchanged it for something else. Gonav v'nosan b'matona, he stole an animal and then gave it away as a gift. Gonav upara b'chovo, he stole an animal and used that animal to pay off a debt. Gonav upara b'hekefo, or he stole an animal in order to pay off credit that he had been extended. Gonav v'sholach b'savlonis b'veis chomiv, he stole an animal and then sent it as savlonis, or gifts, to the house of his father-in-law. You can imagine a case where a man, let us say, had betrothed a woman, and she was still living in her father's home. So he stole an animal and then sent the animal as a gift to the father-in-law's home. Mishalem tashlume arba b'chamish. In all of these cases, the multiple payment for sale, in addition to the sale following the theft, the obligation of 4 or 5 is incurred. My komashmol, and what is this source revealing to us? In other words, this source seems to be very straightforward, very simple. Doesn't seem to be any novel information. After all, you're dealing in many of these cases, he stole and then giving it as a gift or selling it. It's all the same thing. So what's the source telling us? So we've used a double underline to highlight the parts of the source, the aspects of the source that do have an element of revelation in them. Ashmin and Reisha, Gona v'nosan li'achir v'tovach, the example of the Reisha, he stole and then appointed someone else to do the slaughtering, that slaughtering is going to, mechayev, is going to obligate the thief. The thief didn't slaughter, someone else slaughtered. But the act of slaughtering of this other party, the appointed agent to do the slaughtering, reflects back on the thief, and he'll have to pay the 4 or 5. The thief himself, the yeshliach l'dvar avera, from the ratio you see, a very unique concept, that there is agency, meaning act of one reflects back onto a second party, or the act of, in this case, the second party, the one who does the slaughtering, it reflects back on the first party, the one who did the theft. It's considered as if the thief himself did the slaughtering. That's called yeshliach. There is agency for an avera, for sinfulness. Even though, with regard to all other matters in the Torah, if a person asks someone else to do a sinful act, the one who's requesting is not going to be guilty. It's only the one that does the sinful act is guilty, because he should have known better not to listen to some human being asking you to do something against the Torah. Divrei HaRav v'Divrei HaTalmid. If it's a matter of the master or the student, to whom would you listen? Of course you would listen to the master. So the concept of agency does not apply in the rest of the Torah. Hacha yesh liach l'dvar avera. Here, with regard to slaughtering, the concept of shlichus applies, so that the act of the slaughterer binds the thief into paying the 4 or 5. My time, what's the basis for that? The answer is because in the Torah it presents the act of slaughtering alongside the act of selling the stolen animal. It says utvacho umechoro, and it also says mechira. Ma mechira. Just like a sale, de lo efshe de lav al yedei acher, it's impossible to have something called a sale unless you have an additional party involved. You can't sell something to yourself. So you have the thief, The Torah speaks about the thief being obligated to pay 4 or 5 for doing a sale. In order for that to arise, he has to have another party involved, someone to whom it sold. Af tvicha al yedei acher mechayev. So to tvicha, which even though in theory doesn't require someone else, the thief himself could is capable of slaughtering. But nevertheless, since tvicha slaughtering is compared to mechira, to sale, just like sale requires another person, and even so, the ganav, the thief himself, has to pay the multiple 4 or 5. So too, in the case of tvich, of slaughtering done through an agent, the thief will have to pay the 4 or 5. The Ashminan seifa ganav v'hikdish. Remember, we emphasized above the word seifa at the very top of this omid. The seifa said ganav v'hikdish, and the rule of this, the source ruled that if a thief stole and then sanctified, he has to pay multiple 4 or 5. Tashmin and Seifa Ganav Hikdish, so that part of the source that said Ganav Hikdish teaches me Mali Mochro Lehedyo Mali Mochro Leshamayim. What difference does it make whether the thief sells to another commoner, which of course generates the 4 or 5 payment, or you sold it, so to speak, you transferred ownership of it to heaven by sanctifying it. That too will, Mechayev will obligate the thief to pay the 4 or 5 for his having subsequently sanctified it. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.